Introduction. Everything you do, seeing, smelling, moving muscles, talking, even thinking and your emotional responses involve the nervous system in some way. Other processes taking place inside our body that we don't think about, such as digestion of food or regulating temperature, are all controlled by the nervous system. This means that changes in nervous function can have important implications for both our physical and mental health. Therefore, it is important that we gain an understanding of the structure and function of this important component of the body. The nervous system is composed of nervous tissue. This tissue is the main component of the brain, spinal cord, and the nerves that are spread all over the body. Nervous tissue is composed of two main cell types, nerve cells and glia cells. Nerve cells, often called neurons, are specialized cells that generate and propagate nerve impulses throughout the brain, between the brain and the spinal cord, and between the spinal cord and the body's various organs and tissues. Glial cells, on the other hand, do not generate or conduct nerve impulses, but function to protect, nourish, and support nerve cells in various ways. In this resource, we will provide a simple overview of nervous system structure and function. We will then go on to look at the different types of cells that nervous tissue is composed of. Lastly, we will look in more detail at how nerve cells function to generate and send impulses. Nervous system, an overview. This chapter provides an introduction to the nervous system's overall functions and organisation. Learning outcomes. After studying this section of the nervous system, you should be able to explain the nervous system's role in homeostasis, explain the concepts of sensory and motor signals, describe the nervous system organization. The organization of the nervous system. The nervous system is divided into two main systems: central nervous system, CNS, peripheral nervous system, PNS. The central nervous system consists of the brain and spinal cord. The peripheral nervous system is the section of the nervous system that is physically located outside the brain and spinal cord, that is, the nerve cells that extend from the brain and spinal cord to the body's tissues. The longest of these cells can be over 1 meter long, for example, those extending from the spinal cord to the toes. The toes represent here what we call the body's peripheral tissues, i.e. body tissue that lies outside the central nervous system. Furthermore, the peripheral nervous system is divided into sensory and motor units. Sensory units consist of nerve cells that send signals to the central nervous system, and motor units consist of nerve cells that send signals from the central nervous system to the body's muscles and glands. As figure 1 shows, the motor unit is further divided into the somatic nervous system, i.e. voluntary, and autonomic nervous system, which is not voluntary. The somatic nervous system thus represents the part of the nervous system under conscious control, and signals from these nerves go exclusively to skeletal muscles. The autonomic nervous system is further divided into the sympathetic and parasympathetic systems. Both sympathetic and parasympathetic nerve cells transmit signals to the muscles and glands throughout the body without you being aware, and regulate a wide range of physiological functions. The functions of the nervous system. The nervous system is a control and communication system. It controls and regulates body functions. Whilst the processes involved are complex, its basic function can be explained by thinking about it in terms of three basic components. These are sensation. Signals are messages from the receptors found in body tissues or from organs, whose function it is to collect information from the external environment, are collected and transmitted to the CNS. Processing. The CNS integrates and processes the incoming information. Action. The CNS sends out motor signals to muscles and glands to modify body functions in response to the information it has received and processed. Let's take a simple example. When you get up from the couch to go into the cold to buy a newspaper, the CNS receives immediate indications of changes, such as blood pressure, temperature, and oxygen requirements. This information is processed, and the CNS then sends out a range of signals to organs, such as the heart, lungs, skin, and so on, to enable them to change their function appropriately in order to maintain homeostatic balance. Most of this happens without us even thinking about it. But of course, the response of our body to the desire to read the newspaper, the moving of muscles and so on that allow us to walk to the shop, can also be considered in the light of the three components above. See if you can work out how. Think about what signals from which body tissues need to be sent to and from the CNS to achieve the actions. Tissues of a nervous system. Nervous tissue is composed of relatively few cell types categorized into two groups: nerve cells, often called neurons, glial cells. Nerve cells are the cells that transmit nerve impulses. They account for signal transmission from one part of the brain to another, or from the brain and spinal cord to other organs, muscles, and glands. Glial cells support neurons, learning outcomes. After studying tissues of a nervous system, you should be able to describe the characteristics of a nerve cell, explain the types of glial cells found within the nervous system, explain the main function of Schwann cells and ependymal cells. The nerve cell. Figure 2 shows a nerve cell. In fact, there are many different types of nerve cells. The figure is only an illustration of what we may call a general nerve cell. Typically, a nerve cell is composed of a cell body, soma, one long extension called an axon, numerous short extensions called dendrites. Some nerve cells are surrounded by a structure called the myelin sheath. This is coiled around the axon and insulates it. However, this is not a continuous structure. At intervals along the axon are small gaps in this insulation known as the nodes of Ranvier. At its end, an axon branches off and forms many axon terminals. The axon conveys the electrical nerve impulse generated in the soma, and this signal is transmitted to other nerve cells, muscles, or glands via the axon terminals. The short dendrites also function to allow nerve cells to communicate with one another through propagation of electrical impulses from the soma. Glia. Within the nervous system, there are approximately 10 times as many glial cells as nerve cells. There are 6 types of glial cells in the human nervous system. Their function is to support and protect and nourish neurons. Glial cells also form the blood-brain barrier. The barrier protects the brain by preventing the entry of many substances, such as certain drugs, from the blood. Given their essential functions and their associations to various neurological diseases, it is important to have an understanding of these cells. 4 types of glial cells are found in the CNS: astrocytes, microglial cells, ependymal cells, oligodendrocytes. Astrocytes. The name of astrocytes come from a star-like shape. They are the most abundant form of glial cell within the CNS. Astrocytes are involved in a variety of functions. Astrocyte extensions wrap around both neurons and surrounding capillaries, small blood vessels. In this way, they anchor the nerve cells to blood vessels and regulate the transport of substances from the blood into the brain. Microglia cells. The long extensions of microglia cells come into close contact with different nerve cells, and their role is protection. If they detect damaged or infected tissue, the microglia cells are converted to immune-like cells that destroy the dead cells and microorganisms. This function is essential to the health of the CNS, as immune cells do not enter the brain under normal circumstances. Ependymal cells. The ependymal cells are located within the fluid-filled spaces within the brain and spinal cord. They produce the fluid called cerebrospinal fluid, CSF, that occupies these spaces. Ependymal cells possess small microscopic hair-like structures called cilia on their surfaces. By moving their cilia, they also help to maintain the movement of CSF. Oligodendrocytes. Oligodendrocytes wrap around the largest nerve cells in the CNS to isolate them from surrounding cells through the production of a myelin sheath. Multiple sclerosis, often referred to simply as MS, is a chronic inflammation of the CNS, characterized by destruction of the myelin sheath. This affects the nerve's ability to manage nerve impulses, leading to a variety of neurological symptoms depending on where in the brain this occurs. 2 types of glial cells are found in the peripheral nervous system, PNS. Satellite cells, Schwann cells. Satellite cells and Schwann cells. Satellite cells and Schwann cells. Satellite cells surround the soma of certain types of nerve cells that are found outside the CNS. These cells are part of sympathetic, parasympathetic, or sensory systems. Their function is unknown, but they may have similar functions to those of astrocytes in the CNS. Schwann cells coil around the axons of some nerve cells in the PNS, forming the myelin sheath. The purpose of a myelin sheath is to isolate the axon. This increases the speed of nerve impulse conduction as compared with impulses in nerve cells without a myelin sheath. Summary. Nervous tissue is composed of 2 main groups of cells: neurons that send nerve impulses and glial cells that support neurons. In the following section, we look more closely at the nerve impulse. Nerve cell physiology. This section will cover a nerve cell function, specifically how and why nerve cells generate impulses, how they transmit these, and how they transfer them to the next neuron via a structure called the synapse. An understanding of this process is essential to an appreciation of how the nervous system works and how certain drugs work. Learning outcomes. After studying nerve cell physiology, you will be able to explain the terms membrane potential, action potential, depolarization, and repolarization. Describe the ions involved in transmitting nerve impulses. Explain what happens at the synapse. Give examples of neurotransmitter substances. The nerve impulse. Nerve cells transmit their nerve impulses to either other nerve cells, muscle cells, glandular cells. Let's consider what happens when you lift your arm. Prior to the lift, nerve cells in different areas in the brain communicate with each other via nerve impulses. Within the brain, complex patterns of impulses are generated, and these move between brain cells in different areas of the brain as the brain performs its computational functions. We say that the neurons communicate with each other. Finally, a nerve impulse leaves the brain and travels via a series of other nerve cells to the skeletal muscle cells, stimulating them to contract. All of our higher cognitive functions, such as thoughts and learning, also involve such neuronal communications. Nerve cells communicate with one another through specialized junctions called synapses. A neuron receives impulses from other neurons mainly through synapses on its dendritic tree and cell body. If conditions are right, then this neuron will generate an electrical signal of its own. This impulse will be transmitted down the axon, where it will go on to stimulate other neurons along the pathway. The production of nerve impulses is carefully regulated. There are in fact two kinds of impulses a nerve cell can receive. These are called stimulatory impulses, inhibitory impulses. Stimulatory impulses arriving on the dendrites or cell body increase the likelihood that the neuron itself will generate a nerve impulse in its axon. Inhibitory signals arriving on the dendrites or cell body decrease the likelihood that the nerve cell will generate a nerve impulse in its axon. It is the summation of the stimulatory and inhibitory impulses that determine whether or not a neuron will generate its own impulse and send this down its axon. There is a threshold level of stimulation that must be met before a nerve cell will generate its own impulse. Each stimulatory input makes it more likely that the cell will fire off an impulse, whereas each inhibitory impulse makes it less likely. In reality, this is an extremely complex process. For example, nerve cells in the spinal cord are in contact with no less than 10,000 other nerve cells on their dendrites and cell bodies. Some of these are stimulatory and other inhibitory. Not all are necessarily acting at all times. This means that at one time, the inhibitory signals may dominate, whilst at other times, the stimulatory signals may dominate. Some drugs can be used to influence this process. When you take a sleeping pill, the ingredients of the pill affect the inhibitory signals so that they dominate in certain areas of the brain. A sleepy state is induced because the activity of nerve impulses that keep the brain active are inhibited. In order to fully understand these processes, we must dig a little deeper. Depolarization plus repolarization. Resting potential. Before we look at what happens when a neuron sends a nerve impulse, we need to consider the concept of membrane potential. Membrane potential describes the physical voltage difference between the inside and outside the cell membrane, just like the difference between the positive and negative poles of a battery. There are two types of membrane potentials in cells, resting potential and action potential. Resting potential. All cells have a resting potential. This is because the inside and outside of cells have a different distribution of positive and negative charges. This is determined by the distribution of specific ions and proteins. The sodium ions and potassium ions are positively charged. The chloride ion, on the other hand, has a negative charge. All proteins have an overall negative charge. These ions and proteins are unevenly distributed between the inside and outside of cells, in such a way that the intracellular side, inside, is relatively more negative than the outside of a cell, called the extracellular side. There are three main reasons why the intracellular side is more negative than the extracellular side. The cell membrane contains a pump called the sodium-potassium ATPase pump. This continuously pumps three sodium ions out of the cell, whilst pumping only two potassium ions back in. This represents an overall deficit of positive charge for the inside of a cell, and thus it is negative when compared with the extracellular fluid. The cell membrane allows some leakage of ions, but this is far greater for potassium than sodium. Both ions will be drawn to the area where there is a lower concentration, so more potassium leaks out of a cell, taking its positive charge with it, meaning more positive charge accumulates outside of a cell. Most proteins are intracellular and, as mentioned, negatively charged, so they contribute to the net negative charge inside the cell. Overall, cells have a resting potential of minus 70 millivolts across their cell membrane from inside to out. The consequence of this is that if an ion channel for sodium opens in the cell membrane, sodium will flow into the cell by diffusion. The unequal distribution of charge will be evened out and the membrane potential increases from minus 70 MV to zero. An increase of membrane potential is called a depolarization. Action potential. Let us now consider what happens when a neuron generates an action potential. As well as the sodium-potassium pump, the membrane also has ion channels through which ions can pass under certain conditions. One of these is called the sodium channel. This allows sodium to move into the cell driven by the concentration difference on both sides of the membrane. However, it is usually closed in a resting nerve cell. When a nerve cell becomes activated, this sodium channel opens up and sodium flows into the cell due to diffusion. As the positively charged sodium rushes into the cell, it brings with it its positive charge, and the inside of the cell changes from being negative, when compared with the outside, to actually being positive. The membrane potential rises to plus 30 MV. This change in polarity from negative to positive is called depolarization. As the membrane potential becomes more positive, eventually the sodium channel closes. As the membrane potential becomes more positive, a second channel, this time for potassium, opens up. This allows potassium to flow out of the cell, again due to diffusion. As potassium carries its positive charge to the outside of the cell, the membrane potential then returns to minus 70 MV. This is called repolarization, as the original charge differential between the inside and outside of the cell is re-established. An action potential is the sum of depolarization and repolarization. Figure 7 shows an animation illustrating how the action potential spreads along the axon. When we measure membrane potential at a particular point on the axon, we first see the resting potential is at minus 70 MV. When the nerve impulses arrive, ion channels for sodium open, sodium flows into the cell, and the membrane potential is locally reversed to plus 30 MV. This is depolarization. Immediately afterwards, repolarization occurs and the membrane potential returns to minus 70 MV. This is due to the opening of the potassium channels. The cell has regained its resting potential. A nerve impulse is conveyed along the axon when such an action potential spreads through the axon. So how is an action potential initiated? The trigger for the opening of the sodium channels that drive the action potential is a small change in membrane potential to about minus 50 MV. The sodium channels then open spontaneously. When sodium flows into the cell or axon, the membrane potential in this particular region increases. We say that the membrane is depolarized. This depolarized region, being very positive compared to its neighboring regions, tends to attract the negative ions and proteins away from those surrounding areas. This causes a small rise in the membrane potential. When this small rise reaches about minus 50 MV, then the sodium channels in these surrounding regions open up and an action potential begins here also. In this way, depolarization is spreading along the axon towards the axon terminals. The nerve impulse thus consists of a local depolarization that spreads along the axon, followed by a corresponding local repolarization which restores resting potential and prepares the neuron for a new nerve impulse. At any one time, a nerve cell is either resting or sending a nerve impulse, action potential. They are either on or off. In other words, there are no strong or weak nerve impulses. Either the nerve cell is activated or not. This is sometimes called the all-or-nothing response. An action potential cannot be half activated. The strength of a signal that a nerve cell sends lies in the frequency of impulses that it conveys. A nerve cell could send numerous nerve impulses in a second, only a few or none. The perception of a strong flavour or a loud sound is not due to the strength of nerve impulses, but rather a high frequency of impulses in a short time. As mentioned previously, an axon with a myelin sheath around it transmits a nerve impulse faster than an axon without a myelin sheath. The reason for this increase in speed can be understood when we consider the arrangement of the ion channels in these axons. There are no ion channels to exchange sodium and potassium with the outside of a cell, where the axon is covered in myelin. Instead, they are concentrated into the small gaps in the myelin called the nodes of Ranvier. Therefore, the positive membrane potential generated by an action potential at one node draws negative ions from along the axon between itself and the next node, and the sodium channels are destabilized at the next node, leading to the triggering of an action potential here, instead of in the area directly adjacent to the first node. In this way, the action potential jumps along the axon. This is known as saltatory conduction. In addition to myelin, the diameter of the axon matters with respect to signal speed. The larger the diameter, the faster the nerve impulse travels. The faster nerve cells have speeds of up to 130 milliseconds. Think about a time when you have stubbed your toe. First you feel a sharp stabbing pain and probably shout ouch, then afterwards you feel a long, dull, throbbing feeling. The reason for this is that the type of pain receptors that send the sharp stabbing pain that alerts you that you have hit something convey signals via large myelinated nerves, whereas the pain signals associated with the dull ache travel in smaller non-myelinated nerves. Therefore, the sharp pain reaches the brain first, causing you to shout ouch, and then this is followed by the dull aching pain. Summary. An axon transmits a nerve impulse when the membrane potential at the start of the axon is destabilized sufficiently to generate an action potential. The action potential then propagates along the axon by destabilizing the membrane potential in the adjacent part of the axon, or at the next node of Ranvier. What determines whether the membrane potential will be destabilized at the beginning of the axon is the sum of the stimulatory and inhibitory inputs on the dendrites and cell body. Inhibitory inputs actually make it less likely than the resting potential will be destabilized because they actually make the resting potential more negative, making it harder for the threshold value of minus 50 MV that triggers depolarization through opening of the sodium channels to be achieved. Synapse. The synapse is the place where a nerve impulse is transmitted from the axon of a nerve cell to the dendrites or cell body of a neighboring cell. Overall, there may be thousands of such synapses on each neuron, and one neuron can form synapses with several thousand other neurons. There are two types of synapses, electrical, chemical. Electrical synapses are located where the neighboring cells are tightly connected, so that the electrical nerve impulse is transmitted directly from one cell and into the second through pores between the cells that allow direct movement of ions from one cell to another. Chemical synapses use neurotransmitter substances to transmit nerve impulses to the next cell or to inhibit it. The following section describes the chemical synapses and function of neurotransmitter substances. Chemical synapses. Figure 10 shows a detailed view of a chemical synapse. The axon terminal belongs to what we call the presynaptic cell. The second cell is called the postsynaptic cell. The cleft between these cells is called the synaptic cleft. At the axon terminals, there are numerous vesicles containing molecules we call neurotransmitter substances. Examples of neurotransmitters include acetylcholine, epinephrine, sometimes called adrenaline, and dopamine. The following occurs in the synapse. An action potential, nerve impulse, arrives at the axon terminal. Here, ion channels for calcium ions are opened in place of sodium. The influx of calcium into the nerve terminal causes vesicles containing neurotransmitters in the axon terminal to fuse with the cell membrane. The vesicles release the neurotransmitter that they contain into the synaptic cleft. This fusing of the vesicles to the cell membrane and release of neurotransmitter is known as exocytosis. The neurotransmitter then diffuses across the synaptic cleft to the postsynaptic cell membrane. Here it binds to the specific receptors in the cell membrane. This binding leads to opening of an ion channel, such as a sodium or potassium channel. Neurotransmitter substances bind to their receptors for a very short time before it is eliminated by enzymes and/or taken back up by the presynaptic neuron. Thus, the stimulation induced by a neurotransmitter substance will only last for a very short time. This allows one nerve impulse to be completed before the next nerve impulse comes along. If the neurotransmitter substance opens a sodium channel, sodium flows into the postsynaptic neuron. This increases the likelihood that the membrane potential at the start of the axon of the postsynaptic neuron will reach the threshold value for action potential generation. On the other hand, if the neurotransmitter substance opens potassium channels, the likelihood that the postsynaptic neuron will reach the threshold value is diminished as potassium flows out of the postsynaptic cell and membrane potential drops to minus 100 mV, for example. Therefore, it is the sum of what happens at all of the synapses on a nerve cell that determines whether the postsynaptic neuron transmits a nerve impulse or not. Neurotransmitter substance. There are many different types of neurotransmitter substances in our nervous system. The most well-known are acetylcholine, adrenaline, noradrenaline, dopamine, serotonin, and GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid. These are found throughout the brain in different areas. However, some brain regions may have more of one type than another. Some neurotransmitters are also found in the peripheral nervous system synapses. Each neurotransmitter substance has its own specific receptors. Importantly, for each type of receptor, there are several subtypes. Let's look at the norepinephrine, also called noradrenaline neurotransmitter, as an example. Norepinephrine acts on the norepinephrine receptor, but in fact, there are two main types of this receptor, named alpha and beta. To make matters more complex, for each of these, there are several subtypes, such as alpha-1, alpha-2, beta-1, etc. Each subtype of receptor has its own distribution within the nervous system, and consequently has different actions. Also, the relative ability of norepinephrine to bind to these receptor subtypes also varies. A neurotransmitter's effect on the postsynaptic cell may also vary. In one synapse, a given neurotransmitter substance may have a stimulating effect on the postsynaptic nerve cell, whereas in another synapse, elsewhere in the brain, for example, the same neurotransmitter substance may have the opposite effect. This difference is often driven by the type of receptor found on the postsynaptic membrane at a given synapse. Many drugs that act on the nervous system do so by interacting with the synapse. For example, one of the structures in the brain, known as the substantia nigra, contains nerve cells that make extensive use of dopamine as a neurotransmitter substance. In Parkinson's disease, these neurons are destroyed. Therefore, the treatment for this disease involves a drug that contains a substance that the brain can convert into dopamine. Another example of a group of drugs that alter synaptic transmission are the SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. These drugs are given to people with various forms of depressive disorders. SSRIs inhibit the reuptake of serotonin from the synapse after it's been released in the synaptic cleft. Accordingly, serotonin acts longer on the postsynaptic nerve cell receptors, and its effects on these cells are increased. Different drugs that mimic the action of neurotransmitters will also have a differential ability to bind to different subtypes of receptors. These differences can be exploited therapeutically to preferentially stimulate or block different actions of neurotransmitters. However, it is not like that a type of receptor will only be found in one location or have one action. This partly explains why drugs often have side effects. Summary. In this chapter, we have described what a nerve impulse is. We have learned that this is controlled by the movement of sodium and potassium ions in and out of neurons and axons. We have discussed the ways in which nerve cells communicate together using neurotransmitters released into the synaptic cleft, and that these have either a stimulating or inhibiting effect on the postsynaptic neuron. The postsynaptic neuron is regulated by several thousand such synapses at any time, and it is the sum of stimulatory and inhibitory synapses at any given time that determines whether the postsynaptic neuron will reach the threshold membrane potential to generate a new nerve impulse. Summary. Our nervous system is organized into two main systems, the central nervous system and the peripheral nervous system. In both, we find neurons and glial cells that provide neuroprotective support in terms of nutrition, insulation, and protection to these neurons. A nerve cell's main task is to send nerve impulse to other nerve cells, muscle cells, or glandular tissue. The nerve impulse is an electrical impulse which is controlled by sodium and potassium movements in and out of a cell in the form of an action potential. When a nerve impulse enters the axon terminal, it releases a neurotransmitter, such as acetylcholine, into the synaptic cleft. These neurotransmitters stimulate or inhibit the postsynaptic nerve cell. A new nerve impulse is generated in the axon when the threshold membrane potential necessary for the spontaneous opening of sodium channels in the cell membrane is achieved by the summation of all the stimulatory, excitatory, and inhibitory synapses on the cell body and dendrites of that cell.